You're listening to TIP.
Before we knew it, we'd almost doubled the business. And so another car wash came up for sale. It was almost a carbon copy of the first one, the same builder. Bought that one. And then it was just this nice little side gig. And then in December of 22, I do what every entrepreneur does is you email your accountant and says, okay, what's the damage? How much am I going to owe come March for tax bill? And she says, I don't think you're going to owe anything.
Hey guys, in today's episode, I had the pleasure of sitting down and talking with serial entrepreneur Chris Berg to talk about how he turns the cash flows from his online businesses to purchase car washes. He then utilizes a tax-saving strategy called bonus depreciation to pay almost nothing in taxes. You also hear about the many entrepreneurial adventures Chris has had, the books that have had a big impact on the trajectory of his career, what it was like living off the grid for 13 years, and a whole lot more. Chris Berg has been an entrepreneur for over 21 years, and he started out with a home service business, but he's since had startups in solar, e-com, real estate, and several other industries. Now he runs a portfolio of online businesses and takes those profits and invests in car washes. I really enjoyed learning about Chris's strategy, using his free cash flows to invest in these car washes, doing a value add, and then using existing IRS tax codes to dramatically reduce his tax bill. And so, without further delay, let's dive into today's episode with Chris Berg.
Celebrating 10 years, you are listening to Millennial Investing by the Investors Podcast Network. Since 2014, we interviewed successful entrepreneurs, business leaders, and investors to help educate and inspire the millennial generation. Now for your host, Patrick Donnelly.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Millennial Investing Podcast. I'm your host today, Patrick Donnelly. And joining me in today's studio is Mr. Chris Berg. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Patrick. Excited to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. You're known as the car wash guy on Twitter, and that's how I came across you. I really love your content. You're a great writer, and we're going to get into writing a little bit in the interview. But I wanted to start off, you've had a really interesting life, and I wanted to talk about like your early days. You kind of remind me of like a Mike Rowe, what was that, Dirty Jobs guy, right? Like you've had a lot of interesting different jobs like early on in your, let's say your 20s, even teens. So I wanted to talk about that, just kind of like your early days and just growing up, like some of the jobs you did and some of the experiences you had.
Great, because that's kind of what's informed my work ethic now. My first job, I was 12 years old and my mom came home and said, I got you a job. Like there was no question of whether I could take it or not. It was, you have a job. You're supposed to show up this Saturday morning. And it was at a veterinary clinic. It had some kennels in the back. And my job was literally to scoop the poop. So I was a pooper scooper, born and raised. I did that till I was 18 years old every weekend. And if I couldn't make it, I had to find somebody who could. So, and then a lot of those dogs were sick. So you can imagine the mess I had to clean up. And then summer jobs were on a farm. I worked on a garlic farm. This guy grew organic garlic back before anybody knew what organic was. And then, so you had to move irrigation water and there was horses. So you were bucking hay and all this stuff. And it was in Southern Colorado. So it was really hot in the summer. And then in college, I got into the mining business. I was actually a mining engineer. And part of the education there was you had to mine. You would drill, load up the face with explosives, blow it up, and then take in the equipment and shovel out the rock and go dump it and process it. It was really cool. So I had a lot of dirty jobs early in my life. So I can see why you get the micro thing.
Yeah. And then your first entrepreneurial venture, tell us about that. Wasn't that excavating?
Yeah, it was excavating. Yeah. So I had a kind of an early life crisis when I was 27, quit my job, quit my girlfriend, packed up my truck and moved back home. And this guy that I moved in with had just bought a lube oil shop with an SBA loan. And he said he was living a pretty good lifestyle, making good money. And I thought, well, I could do that. I found an excavation company back in the very first iteration of bizbuysell.com. This is 2003, and went to his same SBA lender and they backed me. It was a whopping $180,000 business, but that's what they grossed and that's what they sold for. And I put down about $50,000 and got a couple trucks and a mini excavator and a couple skid steers. And off I went and we dug sewer lines and water lines. And our unique thing was that we had permits to go into the right of way. So we could cut up a street and fix a sewer line or a water line. That turned out to be a good differentiator because we could charge a lot more because we could then patch the asphalt and the concrete. And so I did that for 4 years. Extremely stressful business, and I'll never recommend that to anybody. But I basically turned that $50,000 into about, after it was all said and done, it was about $650,000 when I sold the business 4 years later. I grew up from, the top line was $180,000. I grew it up to about $2.6 million. And sold it. And after all the debt was paid and all the taxes and everything, I had a nice little nest egg. And that's when I went off the grid. Literally, I got so sick of living in the city that my future wife and I moved into an off-grid home, and we lived in a solar and wind-powered home for the next 13 years.
So tell me about that. I had the same experience, not quite like yours. I was still in Ohio, but living off the grid. It had always been like a dream of mine. And I don't even know what inspired it, but just this return to simple living, maybe like reading Walden and Henry David Thoreau was like always a big influence for me. But tell me about that. So you guys, how did you convince your wife, first of all, to go do this? And then tell me about just like the experience. I want to hear more about it.
Yeah, actually it was her idea. So I didn't have to convince her at all. She was not a city gal.
And you guys were living where? In Denver? Or?
We were living in Denver. We're living right in the city, a very busy part of the city. If anybody knows Wash Park, it's essentially right in the city and extremely noisy. There's quite a bit of crime. You know, you got police helicopters floating over, all this stuff. Cars were being broken into. So this is in about 2007. Sold the business and we just decided to move up into the mountains. And the off-grid thing was a little bit of an accident, because it was one of the few places we could afford. We were looking at Steamboat Springs, Colorado, which is kind of northwest area. And for our budget, which is at the time was like $400,000, it was either a house in the middle of nowhere that didn't have grid power or a condo in town. And we were looking for the full mountain experience. And so this off-grid house was really all we could afford. And so we thought, well, we'll figure this out. This will be kind of cool. It's kind of a fun, you know, thing to tell people we live off the grid. And so, but it was a baptism by fire too, because we moved in there January of 08, and Steamboat that winter had the snowiest winter on record. And when it snows, you don't generate a lot of solar power. And solar power was all this place had. It had a backup generator, but the guy who had built this place just didn't know what he was doing. There's all these problems. So we had to dig in right away, figure things out. We were constantly on the phone with like kind of like a tech support, and our neighbors jumped in. Luckily, they didn't even know us yet, but there was probably about 10 houses who were also off the grid in this area. And it was wild. It was a really cool way to live, but I'm kind of glad to be back on the grid, if I'm honest.
And that lasted 13 years. Is that what you said?
13 years. Yeah. And then we had kids starting in 2014, and it just got harder and harder, especially in that climate. You know, we're 45 minutes away from our kids' school. It snows a lot in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. If you want to go skiing, that's the place to go, because it snows a ridiculous amount. And the moving of the snow and the driving in the snow just got really old. So we moved in 2020, the height of the pandemic, moved to the western slope of Colorado, which is a much milder climate.
Gotcha. So you sold the excavating business, go off grid. You're still an entrepreneur by heart. It seems like you kind of have this mentality of just, I'll figure it out as I go along. I mean, I don't get the sense that like with the excavating company that, I mean, it was like you figured it out, the business, like you bought it, figured it out, grew it. What did you do next, like after the excavating company?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because when I had the excavation company, I was really burned out and I was looking around at other things to do. And I was admiring the guys who were doing in the Wash Park area of Denver. It's called a scrape off. They would buy the worst house in the nicest neighborhood, they would tear it down, and they'd put up essentially what was a McMansion. And we would do a lot of the concrete and sewer work for them. And I was just watching these guys' lifestyle. And a friend of mine who was doing it, his name is Chad, he would have two houses going at any one time. One would be in the beginning stages, one would be in the ending stage. And I would kind of quiz him, you know, like, what are you doing? And I basically figured out that he was making about $800,000 or $900,000 a year. And although he, you know, construction is not easy by any means, but he lived two blocks from most of his projects. He could be there in 2 minutes to answer questions, and he lived this tremendous lifestyle. So I moved we moved to Steamboat. And I thought, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start building houses just one at a time and I'll figure this out. I didn't know a lot of the construction practices that from the ground up. I knew everything under the ground, but I had to figure out framing and all this stuff. I figured out, you know, I can figure that out. So this is 2008. And little did I know that ain't nobody going to build any houses anytime soon anywhere in early 2008 for really like the next 5 years. Yeah. So I bought a lot that was zoned for a duplex and I had plans drawn up and I had all this stuff. And this, even in March of 08, the bank said, yeah, I think we can do this deal. On a Friday afternoon, they said, come in Monday and we'll get some paperwork going. Come in Monday. And they basically kicked me out of the bank. They were like, we don't want anything to do with this kind of deal anymore. We're not lending on this. We've shut down this whole division. Like, this guy was worried about his job. He wasn't worried about my money. So that shut down in an instant. And of course, thank goodness I was early in that process. I really would have been upside down on that project. So right about that time, I read Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek, just on a whim. It had just come out recently. This is 2008 again, I think, or 2009, somewhere in there. And he was talking about these online businesses. And I lived off the grid in the middle of nowhere. It's not like I could go get a job, you know, and I was unemployable at that point anyway. I'd been an entrepreneur already for 4 years. So I read that book and found a website for sale that was selling solar powered gear. It was solar kits and stuff like that. So I bought that. It cost me, I think I paid $150,000 for it. It was had all this SEO going on and it had orders coming in, all this stuff. And that was my first foray into online business. And I was really hooked because we could travel anywhere. I went to Thailand for a month. We went to Europe. We went all over the country. We'd go to the beach for a month and I could work there. It was a game changer for me. I didn't know anything about websites. I had no idea. And in 2008, 2009, you still had to know a lot of HTML, like even WordPress really wasn't even that popular at that point. So there was another baptism by fire. You're probably going to pick up on that. There's a lot of that going, but that was my first foray into that. And that was a game changer.
One thing that strikes me about you is that you're this like a continual learner. I was looking at some of the certifications that you've had and talk to me about that. Like just being a continual learner, like that hunger and drive to just to learn, like you've done a lot of different certifications and I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it's been interesting because a lot of my friends, I went to an engineering college in Colorado, and a lot of my friends got advanced degrees. They got MBAs and they got PhDs, a lot of them. And I didn't like my area of study, which was mining. I didn't like that enough. I wasn't even making a living at that, you know, as I went down. But I was still interested in learning, and I always kind of wanted something to show for it. So I think my first one was the LEED certification, which is the green building certification. I got that when I thought I was going to be building houses. And then I went on to get my EMT. I got my Firefighter 1 certification. I got a certification in nutrition and personal training. I'm sure I'm forgetting some, but you know, it was one of those things. I was an Eagle Scout when I was a kid and it was kind of like getting a badge. You know, it was kind of that pat on the back. You know, you passed a test and you studied. And yeah, good job. It was that thing. It was that accolade that I sort of missed because when you're an entrepreneur, you don't get that at all. If anything, you get the opposite. Right. So, yeah. So now I'm getting a certification in psilocybin facilitation because I host psychedelic retreats. I'm sure we'll get into that later. But it's just been I have an insane, insatiable curiosity. And this is a cool way to do it and sort of check a box, get a little accolade. And, you know, I haven't used all that stuff that much for prolonged periods, but it's always cool. And I always learn something and I always meet new people. And it's fun.
I see all the books and your bookshelf there behind you. You had mentioned that the Tim Ferriss book, obviously that made a big impact on you. And it sounds like you got into lifestyle design and, you know, time independence, financial independence at that point. I heard you mention Ready, Fire, Aim as a book that was an influence. Are there any others that like kind of come to mind?
Yeah, I'll rewind. The first seminal one for me was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I think that came out in the late 90s, I want to say, maybe early 2000s, whatever it was. And that was seminal for me because my dad was poor dad. He was literally, and his family was all poor dad, that education was the only thing. And I had zero entrepreneurial training, zero entrepreneurial impetus for my entire life. But when I had that crisis when I was 27, I just realized I hated having a boss. I hated my conflicts in all my jobs throughout my whole career was with the boss and them being really set in their ways. And really, they were political creatures, not really production creatures, right? They were bred to fit a system, not to actually get things done. And all about productivity and getting things done and doing things in a new way. So reading that from Kiyosaki was like, wow, okay, you don't have to follow this path. You can follow your own path, and you can, he was doing it with real estate, but that was sort of the kickoff to my entrepreneurial career. And then Ready, Fire, Aim is literally a manual for growing a business from zero to about $100 million. Like, it covers probably three quarters of the issues that any business will come across in that journey. And the name comes from just get started. Don't aim and then fire, just fire, get some customers, get a product out there, whatever it is, get started and worry about the details later. And that was also a game changer for me, because most of the books, even now, are about, you know, setting up a business and hiring an attorney. And there was all this bureaucracy associated with starting a business. I think most people get it now, but in the early 2000s, if you were going to start a business, you needed a business plan, right? And you needed an attorney to do this document for you. You had to have an accountant set up all these things for you. And this book said, just go get a customer, just go start earning something, and then worry about all that crap later. And that was a huge game changer for me.
So your background was in engineering. Like, how did you, and you obviously have done really well financially, how did you go about like just teaching yourself financial literacy? That's one thing like I think is like woefully lacking in our culture, the lack of financial education.
Yeah, I just continually read. I read another book that was huge for me was The Millionaire Next Door. The E-Myth is another one. Just constantly reading. And now that engine for me, like, I don't read that many business books anymore, but that engine for me is really Twitter, right? And X, whatever you want to call it. There's so many smart people posting so many, and there's some, honestly, there's some dumb people posting dumb things too. You can kind of tell, fortunately. But I'm just that curiosity again, just reading and learning. And frankly, you know, at this point, I'm 21 years in my entrepreneurial journey, just a lot of kind of mistakes and screwing up.
So I wanted to hear what happened after you get into the solar business. You're living off the grid. How did that unfold? And like, you've gone on to do many other businesses. So let's kind of talk about the progression a little bit.
Yeah, I'll rewind real quick, because I know you have a lot of real estate investors, right? So in Denver, when I had the excavation company, one of the first things I did when I started making a good income was I bought a triplex and I house hacked. That's not what we called it back then. It was just called buying a triplex. But I lived in one side and rented the two others. It was an up-down duplex on the other side. And then I got in with a good realtor and I wanted to buy another one, and I bought another duplex. In the same case, in both properties, the worst house in a really good neighborhood. The one was literally the worst house. It was probably the worst house in the city at one time. Literally had a bed bug infestation at one time. I got a lot of stories about that. But real estate really kicked off the net worth that I was eventually going to build, because it was work for sure. And I don't recommend it to everybody, but it was an incredible investment, especially with Denver real estate really just exploded the last 20 years. So I had that going. Even when we moved off the grid, I still had these properties. I had three or five units in Denver, and that kicked off cash the entire time. And then when we finally sold it, we had a really nice nest egg too. So that was part of that journey. So you asked, I had the online business, living off the grid, and I was selling solar panels. And right around that time, I had a bunch of health issues. I was having at the time it was a gluten problem, which nobody knew what gluten was in 2008. And I was having digestion issues, and I was really overweight. And I, even though we were living in this off-grid place, I was just kind of fat and sick, to be honest with you. And so being the curious guy, I dug into my health, and that's when I got the nutrition degree. That's when I started studying personal training, and I started talking about it. I had a blog back then. It's long gone now.
What year would this have been?
This was 2009, 2010. So the solar business is going good, but I was having all these health issues, and I had this big list of email addresses because I was constantly gathering emails from my solar website. And I started talking about health stuff, and I thought I would kind of get booed, you know, like, shut up and stick to solar. And some people did say that, but there was a huge response of people saying the same thing, that Western medicine had let us all down. Like, we couldn't figure out. I went to doctor after doctor. Nobody could figure out what's going on. And finally, I went to a naturopath and got all these tests and figured out it was gluten, blah, 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 got better. And I talked about that journey on my blog, and it was had an enormous response. And so I started coming up with health products. I found a manufacturer. I made an early version of what's what is very similar to Athletic Greens, but it had a big shot of protein in it too. And I started selling that to my solar clients, and people were buying it by almost by the pallet load. And I would eventually just call people like, why are you buying 50 bags of this stuff? And it turned out a lot of these people were survivalists because they had solar. They had a little cabin or something. They were setting it up with solar. Now they needed the food and they were buying all this stuff. And so we realized it was this huge overlap with these people. And so that's how my health company, and now we've been doing that for 14 years. So this, my nutrition background and all that really played into it. So now my main job is actually this health company. I'm known as the car wash guy, but I spend more time researching health ingredients, creating health products that can lower your blood sugar or help bladder control issues or pain. We have a lot of joint pain products. And so that's actually my main gig now, is helping. And that's super rewarding because I got an email Friday from a guy who's literally doesn't need a walker anymore because our joint pain product helped him walk again. It's wild. Like, so that's the most rewarding thing I do. The car washes and the real estate now are really kind of a side gig, and it's very fun, but it's not as rewarding as my main thing.
So when you first developed the product, was it to solve your own problem, basically? Like, you were having these health issues. Were you manufacturing all of this?
I sort of combined it. I used my kitchen as a laboratory a little bit and found the products I wanted, because at the time I couldn't eat any dairy, and most protein comes from whey, which is basically a milk product. And so I had to figure out, how can I get all this nutrition without using dairy products and gluten products? So I turned my kitchen into a lab, and then I found a real lab with formulators, and they were approved by the FDA and all this stuff. They actually created the product. That was called American Natural Superfood. And so we actually just discontinued it last month. That's the last two customers, but we've got a ton of other products now. So that I was the guinea pig. I'm still the guinea pig for most of our products.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey everyone, it's Patrick, your host of Millennial Investing. Every year, my buddies and I do a guy's trip to escape the cold and dreary Ohio winters. Once we pick our destination, without fail, we all jump on Airbnb and find an incredible place to stay. We just got back from an amazing trip in Palm Springs, California, and our Airbnb home was a huge part of creating memories we'll never forget. I loved it so much, I'm taking my family back to Palm Springs for spring break, and we're staying in an Airbnb home my kids fell in love with and picked out themselves. While I was there, I had the realization that my own home could be an Airbnb. It's an excellent way to earn some extra cash, whether you're saving up for your next vacation, paying off some bills, or investing. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. That's airbnb.com/host.
Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise flagship fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise flagship fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/millennialinvesting. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise flagship fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
Hey guys, when it comes to financial advice, you've got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever credit card was in my wallet. But I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access, a free flight to a bucket list destination. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and much more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Check out nerdwallet.com and start making smarter financial decisions. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
All right, back to the show.
And that takes up the brunt of your time, even though you've got all these other entrepreneurial ventures going on as well?
Yeah. And right now, Patrick, I'm actually paring down. I think if you followed me for a while, you know that I had like 5 or 6 or 7 things going on. I think we sold out of the financial. I had a financial newsletter company. We sold that a month ago. We're looking to sort of pare down, simplify. Really. And so if I had my druthers, it would be probably 1 or 2 online businesses and then the car wash thing over the next 5 years.
And is that because it just became life was too much, like doing all these different projects, or why did you decide to pare down?
Yeah, I think that the shiny object syndrome is fun for a while. And I think it's a pendulum. I swung into, especially when I got super active on Twitter, all these opportunities cropped up and I jumped into all these things. And honestly, they've been lucrative. Like I've made money off of them and I don't regret a single one of them. But now I'm swinging back. I'm simplifying and I'm really enjoying focusing on just a couple different things. But honestly, I think if we were to have another call in 10 years, you'd say, well, how many things you got going now? And I'm like, oh, I'm back to 7 or 8 things.
Yeah. The shiny object syndrome is, I mean, it's a real danger on Twitter for sure. I want to get into Twitter a little bit. When did you get into it? Why did you get into it? Did you realize the power of it, like as you got into it, or did that kind of develop over time?
That developed over time. I got on in 2011, I want to say, and it was for years. It was just a way to argue about sports, and you know, back then it was a ton of people just telling jokes. It was like comedians workshopping their jokes, so it was just a fun thing. And then in about 2019, 2018 or so, guys like Nick Huber, Sweaty Startup, and some people really started posting valuable business stuff. And I realized, well, I could contribute to this. You know, I have quite a bit of experience. I was learning a ton from these people. And I thought, well, I can share too. And so about 2 years ago, I want to say, I started really sharing my stuff, my journey and my experience. And I shared, I mean, you know, my health supplement company at the time in 2022, it was doing like 18 million or something. And so I was talking about that, but nobody cared. Nobody wanted to hear about that. I think I had like 2,000 followers and I would get like 4 likes on something. And I thought, okay. And then about a year and a half ago, well, I'll rewind. About 2 years ago, I started following, there's, you know, self-storage just blew up on Twitter. Everybody was doing it. And during the pandemic, it became just red hot. And so I thought, well, I can do that. I'm in a sizable town here. I'll find a self-storage facility. And I found a friend of mine who wanted to partner on it. We could do this, right? Well, we looked and looked, and everybody who had a self-storage facility was so completely unrealistic about what that thing was worth that we couldn't make anything work. It was ridiculous what they wanted for their properties. And that didn't work. But in the process, I met an agent, a commercial real estate agent, and he said, you should look at this car wash. It's been sitting on the market. It's kind of a pocket deal now, but it was on the market for 9 months and we just never got any action on it. And so I looked at it and kind of forgot about it. And I came back to it and we realized that it wasn't on Google Maps. They hadn't updated the pricing in a decade or more. The guys who worked there didn't even know how to update the pricing. That's how long it had been. And they had been there 12 or 13 years. And it was just your basic kind of case of neglect. The owners literally owned a bank. So they had much bigger fish to fry. And this was a side gig for them. And they just ignored it essentially. So we bought the first one in April of 2022, coming up on 2 years ago. And it was just fun. All these little levers you could push. You could, you know, the guys who worked there, the attendant said, well, we haven't updated these soaps. We got to get better soap. Everybody hates our soap. Well, that was easy. We just buy new soap. We got to fix this thing. The old owners never wanted to spend any money. Can we fix this thing? Fix the thing. And before we knew it, we had increased the business 70%. We put it on Google Maps. We increased the prices a little bit. We just improved the customer experience. Before we knew it, we had almost doubled the business. And so another car wash came up for sale. It was almost a carbon copy of the first one, the same builder and same original owner. Bought that one. And then it was just this nice little side gig. And then in December of 22, I do what every entrepreneur does is you email your accountant and says, okay, what's the damage? How much am I going to owe come March for tax bill? And she says, I don't think you're going to owe anything. And I had been used to a mid to low 6-figure tax bill for years I've been paying. You know, I would pay the nutritional products and all the online businesses were generating this cash flow. And so we make our quarterly payments as you're supposed to, but there was always a big check to be written. in the spring of the following year. And I said, what do you mean I'm not going to owe anything? And she said, well, there's this thing called bonus depreciation. Did you know about this? And I had heard about it, but 2 years ago, it wasn't quite, you know, there wasn't all these cost seg companies and like people were talking about it, but I didn't truly understand it. So I called her and I said, what are you talking about? And she said, yeah, the depreciation from these car washes are going to wipe out your entire tax bill and you're going to get back all these payments you've made out throughout the year. And that was when I was like, okay, car washes are really pretty cool. I liked them to that point, but I was like, oh my God. And so January 23, I was like, hey guys, I just figured out this crazy thing. I had no idea it was going to be this cool. And so that caught fire. All of a sudden I had 12,000 followers and I was like, well, maybe I should just be the car wash guy. And then that was how it started. And so since then we bought one more, we're trying to buy four more this year. And that's, it's become a life of its own.
So there's lots to unpack here. I want to talk about the first one. Tell me about like just how you're finding these deals, how you're going about, I don't know if you're financing them with a partner. Talk to me a little bit about like the mechanics of like getting a deal done and getting one under ownership.
Yeah. So the first one had been listed, but he basically unlisted it because it just sat for a year on the market. And so they had taken it off of all of, but I had contacted him when I was looking at self-storage facilities. So the agent still knew I was kind of in the market for something, but it was what he called a pocket deal. And we see this a lot in bigger metro areas that a seasoned agent in a certain niche, like car washes or gas stations or self-storage, will not list it in the public listing because he doesn't want the tire kickers. They don't want the incessant phone calls and, you know, emails from all over the world that I'm sure they get on deals that are listed in LoopNet and Crexy and all this stuff. So when I tell people, if you want to look for a car wash deal, in general, you can kind of start asking around to commercial agents on who are the local people who handle these deals. There's usually, in any major area, there's usually a handful of people who will handle the majority of car wash deals. And oftentimes they have pocket deals that they don't want to list, but are indeed for sale. So the next two deals actually we found were listed. They were both listed on Crexy.com. And so you don't have to go off market to find these deals. But this year we're going to be sending, I have had a VA in Pakistan scrape all the car wash ownership listings. We now have the owner's home address or their headquarter address. So we'll be sending personalized letters to all those people. That's another way to do it.
Now, is this all over? Is this just local to you or how do you?
We're just looking at Colorado right now. I get a lot of deals sourced because of my Twitter profile from all over the country. And eventually I'm hoping to buy some of those deals. But right now we like local because we're building up a system. The idea is to build up a system to manage a car wash from anywhere. And we're still in the process of doing that. So we financed the first deal with bank financing. We put down 25%. It was $650K. The second deal, we were only required to put down 20%. And these next couple deals, we're hoping to do SBA. And there's a program for the SBA. I think it's 7A or something. Maybe you know what it is, but it's one of these classifications, but specifically for real estate businesses, based businesses. And for those, you can put down 10%. So we're going to do that on the next couple deals.
So far, how have the banks been viewing, like in your experience so far, how do they view car washes? Are they pretty eager to lend to you?
Well, yeah, certain ones are. It's funny that you'll come up across some banks, and some of these banks we've had relationships with in my other businesses, so you'd think they'd be kind of primed to lend to me. But some of them say, oh, no, car wash. And then others are like, car washes, let's do it. We love them. Bring us all the car wash deals you have. So I've always said you can't have too many bankers. I still believe that. I think you only need one accountant. I probably only need one lawyer for most business, but you need a ton of bankers if you're going to get deals done because they all have different requirements and different niches they like. And so we've got a great lender now called Oakstar. They're kind of a regional, they're based in Missouri, but they're regional, but they seem to love car washes right now. So we're working with them right now, but we know that it tends to be a kind of a localized regional lender. We have not had any luck with the big nationals, the Wells and First and U.S. Bank, and they don't seem to have any appetite for this kind of stuff.
So when you're doing value adds on car washes, basically, right? It's a value add deal, essentially.
It's a value add. Yeah, it's classic value add real estate.
And so when you are when you say car wash, like I think of like the big, we've got in Columbus, Ohio, like the big one is called Moo Car Wash, where they go through the tunnel and, you know, you just sit there in your car, put it in neutral and go. That's not what you're buying, right?
No, those have been overbuilt. And I think a lot of your listeners would probably agree. Like, why are you buying car washes right now? They're building them everywhere. Those are called a tunnel or an express wash. And the car pulls in and you're basically pulled on a conveyor belt through and it spits you out the other side, a clean car. Those have been overbuilt primarily because of this tax break that we'll get into that I'm benefiting from too. But we like the self-serve / touch-free car washes. So when you drive in, you wash your own car. There are a huge percent of the population still like to wash their own car. They don't want to go through those big tunnels because they do tend to damage vehicles. And there's a ton of people who just get a lot of satisfaction from washing their own car. And then we have the touch-free on one side, and it's just what it sounds like. There's no brushes that can damage your car. So they're a lot better. We have this kind of dumbbell clientele. We have kind of the lower end who want to spend $2 on a car wash or maybe $4 and wash their own car. And then we have people with really nice cars who would never trust that car to go through a big tunnel. So our business is steady. This side of the business is growing generally, but it's a completely different niche. It's a completely different customer from those tunnels.
I mentioned my uncle who had a couple car washes. I think he built them in the 80s, had them 90s, you know, 2000s. He had a more like in almost like a tertiary market, kind of out from, you know, in I would say like a blue collar area. And it was like guys in their trucks. And like that was his market. Guys coming in with their ATVs or whatever, you know, like spraying down the back of the bed of their truck. Is that kind of your target market?
That is 100% our target market because that guy can never go through. He can't even go through a touch-free wash, right? And they have this big muddy vehicle. They need to spray it off themselves. A lot of contractors who have big trucks that just can't go through any kind of automated car wash at all. And then a lot of people who have just a custom car who just love to spend an hour on Saturday wiping it down, you know? So that is 100% our market.
So we touched on the value add. You've mentioned a few things like new soap. What else are you doing like to do the value add and like boost the value of these things?
Yeah, I break it down into the three M's. So it's modernize, modify, and marketing. So the modernize is upgrade the soaps, and it's really focused on improving the customer experience. And so much of it is just fixing little broken stuff. And anybody who's ever gone to a self-serve car wash will tell you, they went up to them and this didn't work. My credit card wouldn't swipe. The soap wouldn't come out. The brush was broken. There was mud everywhere, right? So we're just improving the customer experience. And then you can raise prices. That's the modify. We raise the prices. We're almost always slightly above market rate because our car washes work better. And people who want a functional car wash are willing to pay more, right? Then we install a membership program that's been really popular. We started in November. We now have about 75 members between our two local washes. We're going to put it into the third wash probably next year. And then the marketing is get the Google listing up if it doesn't have it. Get 5-star reviews, and then we run a little bit of AdWords. We'll run some direct mail, stuff like that. We put a better signage, like one of the new car wash we bought is one block off, really busy road. We just bought an A-frame sign and just put it right on the busy corner, and more people are aware of our wash now. So the marketing and all this stuff is really simple. If you have any experience marketing a business, you'll look at our methods and think, well, this is like 101 stuff, right? And that's all it is. Then car wash owners don't do it.
Well, it's a little like just the mom and pop self-storage owners. Like they're just not optimized, right? And like those are the ones you want to buy because you can do the value add, the three M's that you're talking about. It's not like brain surgery, right? Like, but it takes energy and effort. That's what you're doing to enhance the value.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole generation of people who thought when they bought real estate that the real estate itself, the simple location of it was all the marketing you ever had to do. And they also thought that most of this real estate was passive. They were told that you just show up and empty the quarter bins, or you just show up and you cut a lock off on the self-storage unit every once in a while, or you show somebody a space once a week or something. And our generation and the millennials are now coming in and saying, if you treat these businesses as active and you're active in it, you can completely revolutionize the business in a matter of weeks almost. And you just show the most basic effort ever, and you're rewarded. You can double and triple the value of these places in a short period of time.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey everyone, it's Patrick, your host of Millennial Investing. Every year, my buddies and I do a guy's trip to escape the cold and dreary Ohio winters. Once we pick our destination, without fail, we all jump on Airbnb and find an incredible place to stay. We just got back from an amazing trip in Palm Springs, California, and our Airbnb home was a huge part of creating memories we'll never forget. I loved it so much, I'm taking my family back to Palm Springs for spring break, and we're staying in an Airbnb home my kids fell in love with and picked out themselves. While I was there, I had the realization that my own home could be an Airbnb. It's an excellent way to earn some extra cash, whether you're saving up for your next vacation, paying off some bills, or investing. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. That's airbnb.com/host.
Today's show is sponsored by public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member of FINRA-SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into a partner bank where they can earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
Hey guys, when it comes to financial advice, you've got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever credit card was in my wallet. But I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? A free flight to a bucket list destination? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and much more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Check out nerdwallet.com and start making smarter financial decisions. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
All right, back to the show.
So what's your end game or exit strategy with these? Are you going to just continue to hold on to them? Are you going to package them up at some point and sell them off? Like, what's the end game?
Yeah, it's kind of a classic roll-up scenario now. So I'm hoping within the next decade that we can get somewhere between 20 and 30 of them. And if we can do that right now, these places, I'm going to do some math here. Hopefully you can follow on. If you can't, but hopefully your audience knows a little bit about a cap rate. It's basically a multiplier for what a property is worth. We're paying a 10 cap, which is 0.1%, 10%, sorry, not 0.1%, 0.1 or 10%, which basically means a 10x multiple price. So if it EBITDA's, which is profit before debt service, if it EBITDA's 50 grand, we'll pay about 500 grand for that property. Okay. So we hope to get somewhere 20, 30 of these, and we hope to get the EBITDA of the entire roll up somewhere in the $3 or $4 million range. Let's just say for easy math, it's $3 million EBITDA across all these locations. They're all branded the same. A member who is a member at one car wash can go to any of them in our network. And we have done the classic 3M strategy to all these places. We've increased the EBITDA radically. Okay. If we had a $3 million EBITDA, now the cap rate gets compressed. And we're seeing some of these chains sell for a 5 cap, which is 5% or 0.05. Now, if you take 3 million and you divide it by 0.05, it's the same thing as multiplying it by 20. Now, all of a sudden, this is a $60 million enterprise. And we've paid far less. We've paid somewhere, less than half of that. And we'll still have some debt on it. But the numbers get really interesting on some of these rollups. That's the plan. Nobody's really done this for self-serve car washes, though, not at this scale. So there is no precedent that I know of here. If one of your listeners does, please tell me, because I'd love to do a case study on it. But we may be a pioneer there. And if that happens and nobody wants to buy this thing, fine. We'll have this tremendous cash flowing asset and we'll just keep it.
Right. And so you're branding them all the same. You're using the same name. I like the idea of, like, you know, the membership that you can go to any of them. What's the biggest challenge right now? Is it finding them, finding like the ones that could, like, be a good value add? Is it the operations? Like, what's the hardest thing right now?
Well, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. Probably the biggest issue is the pricing. Most people are selling one unit for like a six cap, which just doesn't work for anybody right now, especially with interest rates where they are. So you have to wait for them to come down. You got to wait for them. You got to find one that's a little bit of a pig, right? That's got some kind of problem on it. The one we just bought, somebody had crashed into the mechanical room in 2021 and wiped out any kind of business for that place for 9 months. And so they didn't have 3 years of clean books. So we had to do some fancy financing there, but we got a good price for it. Now, the one we're looking at in Denver right now that we'd like to buy, it's got some issues with the pricing and the ownership. There's kind of no labor involved. Nobody knows who's going to actually work there. So it's got a little bit of a problem. And anybody who's done real estate for any amount of time knows that you want those deals with a little bit of hair on it. You don't want some big, hairy, like, environmental disaster going on. But you want the ones that are going to scare off the retail investors that are like, no, I don't know how to figure that out. We know now, we know how to figure out this stuff. So that's where we're kind of deals we're looking for.
So as far as operations go, who's handling that aspect? Let's say the hose goes out or the water's down or soap's out.
We always have an attendant on site, not always, but I would say, you know, about 40 hours a week, sometimes 50 hours a week, there's an attendant on site. That differentiates our car washes too, because most of the self-serve car washes you go to, it looks like they've been abandoned, right? You don't know if anybody's ever been there. The trash is overflowing and all this stuff. So we have attendants on duty during most of the busy times, and they are fixing that stuff. They're emptying the trash bins. And then my partner, Alex, really handles a lot of the mechanical issues that crop up. How are we going to fix this? That kind of thing.
Let's get into what makes car washes attractive. Like, you kind of backed into it. It seems like, go into cost segregation for me. Talk a little bit about it and what the advantages of it are. A lot of people don't even know about cost segregation. So kind of bare level.
Yeah. You know. The bonus depreciation allowance that is now, it's going to be 60% this year. It was designed to spur investment. And so it was basically telling business owners and real estate investors that you can deduct a certain percent right now. And normally when you buy a capital asset like this, a big expensive asset like this, there's a schedule that you get to depreciate it on. And commercial real estate is 39 and a half years. That's a long time. So what this bill did says you can depreciate all of the improvements and equipment on certain assets in year one for 100%. Now last year it was 80% and this year it's 60%. Okay. It's kind of confusing, but follow along. So for a lot of assets like a storage facility, that meant certain percent of the buildings and the improvements, the gate, that kind of stuff. And what a lot of people ended up having to do was get a cost segregation study, because you had to figure out what was depreciable when, and you literally need a certified engineer on some of these properties to go in and figure out this is depreciable this way, this is depreciable this way. And it was a kind of a calculus. Car washes, for whatever reason, the entire property, except for the dirt on the ground, is depreciable under this rule now. That means the building, the equipment in it, the hoses, the paving, the concrete, everything. So you don't need a cost segregation study. All you need to know is what the dirt is worth.
And that's on the auditor's website, right?
Yeah, that's on the auditor's website a lot of times, or that's, you can find an empty lot in a similar neighborhood and say, okay,
that's what it's worth.
Yeah. And so you just subtract that from the price and there you go. That's really what you get to depreciate. So that's one reason why car washes have become very popular over the last few years. They're the easy part.
So, I mean, of all the potential real estate assets you could invest in, in terms of cost segregation, car washes seem like the easy, you know, like no brainer. It's like juiciest ones to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, a lot of people are afraid of them because there's a lot of mechanicals involved. You need a full-time employee. You can really run a self-storage facility with somebody part-time for the most part, right? There's probably a guy who checks in on it, maybe daily, but there's a lot of, I know a lot of operators who don't have many full-time employees at all, and they have five or six properties. But with ours, you kind of need, we do have somebody answering the phone all the time. We have somebody on the site the vast majority of the time. So it's definitely more involved. It's a little more business than real estate, but it's a nice combination of it.
And you kind of backed into it. It sounded like you were trying to find self-storage and nothing was coming up. And this car wash popped up on Crexie.
Yeah, we don't let the tax tail wag the dog. You know, we're not in it just for the tax benefits. It's a very good cash flowing business on its own. And it's a relatively easy business to run and to grow. But the tax benefits really kind of tipped it over into this. Okay, now this is all I want to do. I want to generate income with my online business, spin that into the car washes, and the car washes will then remove the tax bill from the other businesses. And I have this beautiful flywheel.
Right. So you had mentioned you're used to paying, you know, pretty big tax bill, buying these car washes, doing the not cost segregation, but because of the bonus depreciation, what's your tax bill look like now?
Well, I had zero tax bill for 22. For 23, it looks like it may be 40 to 50 grand when I should have paid probably 450 grand. It's massive.
I had a call today with a guy who is a tax attorney, and he was talking about cost segregation, and he was actually working for a cost segregation company like early in his career. He told some investors about it. Like their first question was like, will I go to prison if I do this? Like, it seemed like too good to be true. It was like, nope, this is like part of the IRS code. You can do this.
Yeah. And honestly, I have a little bit of guilt about it because I mean, I use the roads and I use the government services. My kids go to school and all this stuff. And I do have a little bit of guilt in that, but we also drop off some big checks to our local homeless shelter, the local animal shelter. And so we support a lot of our local charities in our own way, but it's wild. I mean, it's legal, right? And that was my big question too, was like, how is this legal?
Yeah. But the idea though is like to, like you mentioned earlier, it's to incentivize real estate investment. And like you're buying these crappy, you know, car washes and doing a value add, making them nicer, like going on to buy more, you know, like it has a net benefit, obviously. Otherwise the IRS wouldn't have it in place.
I totally agree. And now this bonus depreciation thing is working its way through Congress. Looks like they may re-up it and may go back to 100%. Bonus depreciation. So I do think it's a net benefit, but like I said, this is still a great business without that tax benefit, but it's really nice.
Any other parts of the car wash business that we didn't touch on that you'd want to talk about?
No, that's probably it. If you're interested in learning more about this, I would go to taxfreecashcow.com. I set up a website where I'll give you the whole playbook on how to do this, how to find, buy, and run your first car wash. Taxfreecashcow.com. I'll give you the whole playbook on it. It's a course that I've created. I got a million DMs on this when I started posting about it. And so I had to build a course to really do that. But it's, and you can set up a time, you can get a one-on-one consult from me as well.
And I heard, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, it's like $300. And if people don't like it, whatever, you're giving them their money back.
Yeah. My reputation it's actually $200 right now for a limited time. So but yeah, my reputation is worth way more than $200. So if you get into the course and you think it's crap, I'll just give you your money back. I don't want people to be unhappy. So I've only given like two refunds and we've sold about $45,000 worth of it. But if you're not happy, just email me. I'll just give you your money back.
I wanted to talk a little bit about masterminds and groups. And talk to me a little bit about, are you involved in a mastermind? And has that played a big part in your development as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I've done masterminds on and off. My first one was Entrepreneurs Organization in like 2004 or five when I had that excavation company, and it was transformative for me. It's hard to find the right mix of people. Entrepreneurs Organization actually does a really good job of that. If you're a young entrepreneur, I would encourage you to check that out. Now I'm doing the psilocybin therapy with a group of entrepreneurs. It's called Breakthrough. And we take psychedelics, psilocybin, which is known as magic mushrooms.
Which is legal in Colorado, correct? Is it?
It's legal in Colorado. You can do it legally here. I'm getting certified in this. It's one of the other certifications. So it'll be completely legal. Well, I guess it won't be completely legal, still illegal at the federal level. But in any case, it's been transformative for me and the other people that are doing it. We have one guy whose life has completely changed. He was completely kind of lost in his marriage and his business. And now him and his wife are closer than ever. He's completely changed how he parents his children for the better. Another guy, a military veteran with a lot of trauma and everything, was really lost. He's just 8 months later, he's got a successful business, a coaching practice of his own, and is completely off medications. Another guy had a lot of issues like with his business, like, do I sell this? Do I scale this? What do I do? He's now doubled his business in the past few months. So it's been transformative, and it's an instant community. We lack this so much. You know, this is what we really all want on Twitter, right? Is a community, a tribe, and it's given this for these people. We've been texting all day. One of our members has a kind of a family crisis right now. So we're all kind of helping him through that. So it's radically changed how all of us live.
So you call it like a breakthrough event. And tell me a little bit more about it. Like, you guys are getting together like in a retreat type setting, or what's it look like?
Yeah. The name of the organization is Breakthrough. We'll grab an Airbnb somewhere in the mountains, kind of remote, and we'll all gather there for 2 nights and 2.5 days. And there's no alcohol. It's not a party. It's not a rave. We take the substance very intentionally, and some people take a little, some people take a lot, some people don't take it at all. And we all just talk about what we're experiencing. And then the next day we set intentions for how we're going to integrate these findings. You get a lot of insights both during the trip and after, and you can really change your life. And so we have another session coming up in July. We have a couple open slots. If anybody's interested, we'll show you how to contact me at the end of the show here, but it's been transformative. It's like control all delete for your brain. And for some people, it's like 10 years of therapy, 10 years of talk therapy. Not everybody. And I'm careful saying that, but there are some people who have done therapy for years, and just 2 nights with this group has done way more than they could ever have gotten from a psychotherapist.
That's awesome. I've heard it described as kind of like a reboot, rebooting your brain in a way. Control alt delete. And it's another, you mentioned 4-Hour Workweek and Tim Ferriss. That's another thing that he's into. And I think, you know, spends a lot of money actually on encouraging and supporting psilocybin research.
That's right. Yeah. He has funded, because he is very wealthy now. And he has funded a lot of the studies that are going on at Johns Hopkins that shows how this works. And so for people who are skeptical, jump on Johns Hopkins, which is one of the most prestigious medical schools in the world. And they are conducting randomized controlled trials every day on psychedelics. And the findings they're coming up with are just mind blowing. It's absolutely revolutionary for people who are on death's door and are struggling, people who are not responding to any other kinds of therapy. They're having their lives changed by this stuff. It's really cool.
You had a really interesting post about like friendship and loneliness that I kind of wanted to touch on a little bit. Tell the story about it. You had a birthday party and...
Oh, yeah. I think it was like 2017, 2018, somewhere in there. My wife said, your birthday's coming up. Do you want to have a party? And I said, sure. And the date is approaching. We hadn't talked about it. And I think it was actually the next day. And I said, so who's coming? And she kind of broke down. She said, babe, I'm so sorry, but nobody's coming. There's nobody. And I just realized that I just didn't have a lot of friends anymore, or they were far away, or I was ignoring them. So why wouldn't they ignore me? I hadn't gone to their birthday parties. So it wasn't their fault that they weren't interested in coming to my birthday party. So I made a pact then that I was going to find more friends. And so what that entailed was I was living off the grid in the middle of nowhere, and I was sort of becoming this proud loner. You know, like, I don't need anybody, you know, and I realized I was really lonely. So I started being more outgoing. I started going to my son's birthday parties.
Are you an introvert? Like on your Myers-Briggs, are you an introvert?
Yeah, I was actually I was like right in the middle. And so I would be extrovert, introvert at different times, but I hated mingling. I hated small talk. Like, what do you do and where are you from? And like that 90 second interaction that just gets awkward really fast. I hated that. So I would avoid it. So the revolution for me was like, I would go into those situations now and just try to have an interesting conversation. I realized the best way to do that was to just ask interesting questions and not worry about telling my story. Get it out of my head. Like, because so many people are just waiting to talk, right? They ask a question, then they're just waiting to answer it themselves, right? Like, what do you do? I can't wait to tell you what I do. And so I just wipe that away, forego any intention of talking about myself. And I just ask people interesting questions, and it can start in a traditional way. What do you do? But then you take it in. Well, did you study that in college? Oh, well, what did you want to be in college? What did you want to be when you grew up? Where did that take you? Why aren't you doing that? You know, and you really get into people's motivations and thoughts and what they started off doing. It's always interesting to see what they studied in college versus what they're doing now. And it's always an interesting journey how they got there, right? And then you can get into, you know, where did you grow up and what was that like? And naturally would progress to, well, what do you do for fun? And that would transition into, usually, especially when you're in the mountains of Colorado, people have really fun hobbies. And I would ask them what that was. Sometimes it was mountain climbing or backcountry snowboarding or, you know, motorcycle riding. And I said, oh, well, that sounds fun. I'd like to try that. And invariably, if they were nice, they would invite me. And eventually I would go. And all of a sudden I would have one friend and he would introduce me to his other friends. And now I have this groups of friends that we go motorcycle riding, we go backcountry snowboarding, we do all this stuff and we go and eat mushrooms in the mountains. And so I now have several tribes of friends. I have great birthday parties and I feel like I'm really close to, you know, probably 20 people that I didn't even know back when I was having terrible birthday parties. So just getting out of my own shell, asking people interesting questions, being willing to do weird things and follow people into weird activities and hobbies has completely changed my social life. And now I feel really fulfilled and I definitely don't feel lonely anymore.
Yeah, and it makes for a really interesting life. But to your point about conversations, like I think people are starved for this. Like people aren't listened to. And when someone actually asks real questions like you do and is actually curious and interested, it's like, whoa, this is new. Because to your point, like most people are just ready to one up, you know, like you did that. Oh, well, let me tell you about what I did.
Exactly. That's exactly the problem, Patrick. That's exactly it. It's the one-upping and the let's turn the conversation back to me now. Enough about me. What do you think about me? Right? Like that's how a lot of people. And so if you can show a genuine interest in people, first of all, you're instantly likable. Even if you don't ever talk to that person again, and if you never see them again, or if you never hang out with them again, they're going to like you because you showed an interest in them. Okay. And that's a big part of just having a social circle is having people like you. And I men in particular, like I don't need people to like me. I don't give a hell. I don't give a damn what anybody thinks of me. That was so toxic for so long. And it just ended up to a lot of loneliness for me.
Yeah. Well, that's a trap for entrepreneurs too. You get so caught up in your business and growing it. You don't make time for your, you know, friends and maybe even family. Like it can be a real trap.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you have this self-reliance that you think should carry over to everything that you don't need friendship and companionship. And it's completely wrong. It's a horrible way to live.
This is a good place to put a pin in it. I really have enjoyed talking with you here today, Chris. So for our listeners that want to learn more about you, learn about car washes, what you're up to, what's the best way for them to get in touch and reach out?
So jump onto X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, and search for Car Wash Guy. You'll see my face with a yellow background, kind of hard to miss. My name is Chris Berg. You'll see it on the video here if you want to search. It's Chris Berg Tweets. It's my handle on there. And check out, go ahead and follow me, and then check out the highlights. The Twitter has a cool new thing called Highlights. If you jump onto my profile, you'll see the highlights. All of the threads that I've done over the years. Not all of them, but most of them are in there. The loneliness thread is in there. The big rundown on all the car wash stuff we're doing, my supplement business, a lot of stuff is in there. You'll also see a link for my newsletter. These days I'm breaking down interesting businesses. I just broke down my friend's business. He profits $600,000 a year working 10 hours a week on his plumbing business. I actually did a thread on that today. This today is February 26th. So you can kind of rewind the clock when this comes out. Check that out. And that's it. And, you know, talk to me on Twitter and DM me and say, hey, I enjoyed the pod with Patrick. Here's my question. And I'll probably answer.
Yeah. You know, I've DM'd you and you're like, you were real quick getting back to me. And I really encourage people to follow you. Your content's really great. You're a really good writer. And I appreciate like the craft of writing, just, you know, being able to write on Twitter and provide value is you're definitely doing that. So thank you. I mean, I've gotten a lot out of it. Anyway, thanks for your time. This has been fun.
Thanks, Chris.
Me too, Patrick. This was great. Thank you.
Okay, folks, that's all I had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed the show and I'll see you back here real soon.
Thank you for listening to TIP. Make sure to follow Millennial Investing on your favorite podcast app and never miss out on our episodes. To access our show notes, transcripts, or courses, go to theinvestorspodcast.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decision, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by the Investors Podcast Network. Written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.